from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Leicester Square in London, England, where I just saw Roger Federer eating a banana. But he threw it, didn't seem to put it away for recycling, the peel. Roger, we got a planet to save, babe. I know you got other things on your mind. But it is London, England, where the weather has just turned to summer, because people here talk more than New Orleans. They talk about the weather here in London and all over England. And well, they might. They just had some disastrous floods up north. And much like somewhere you know in the United States, relief efforts have been slow in coming, if not coming. A reminder that, yes, we are one country separated by a common language. But we do have a planet to save, although me, given everything that's going on right now, I'm resolutely cartoon neutral as it is. But given the human race's proclivities, I'd say let's set our sights a little higher and try saving all the planets, you know, just in case we move. But all right, hope on the horizon, biofuel, except Swiss agrochemical giant Syngenta, boy, would I like to have made up that name, is seeking human food and feed approval for Cornline 3272. Hello, Cornline. The modified corn would be grown right here in the United States before being shipped to Australia. But Australia's food regulator says there's a chance that this genetically modified corn designed for ethanol could enter the food chain. So you would get better mileage, I guess. Syngenta has confirmed that the genetically modified corn could turn up in alcohol and food. Quite possibly some of the higher quality ethanol will be made into alcohol, which is occasionally used in the food supply or the drink supply. So it could end up in the food supply, said a spokeswoman for Syngenta. And in a runner-up for the quote of the week, she added, quote, "But of course we'll do a rigorous safety assessment," unquote. And we know they will. And, of course, clean, safe, plentiful nuclear power, just in the wings one more time. The question raised on this broadcast, sort of with a relentlessness that's tiresome, is where are they going to do with the waste, babe? So there's a site in the Northern Territory of Australia, again with the Australia, that's proposed for the National Waste Facility of Australia. All the nuclear waste from Australia would be gathered in this one fine repository in the Northern Territory, which is, according to news this week, near one of Australia's earthquake hotspots. Well, what could be wrong with that? Muckety Station. And what could be wrong with the name? Muckety Station is just 100 kilometers north of Tennant Creek, one of the most seismologically active areas down under, or up over if you're looking at it the other way. Figures confirmed by the government seismological monitoring body show there have been 239 earthquakes in the area in the past 10 years and 1,200 since 1988. The majority were kind of minor, but 24 had a magnitude greater than 5. It was also the scene of a powerful 6.3 quake in 1988 that split open the earth south of the town. But a reassuring quote, also runner-up for quote of the week from the senator from the territory, Nigel Scullion. These names authentic, ladies and gentlemen, certified authentic. Quote, "There is an assessment process in place which takes all these issues into consideration, and I have full confidence in this process," unquote. So keep Nigel's name and number in your Rolodex for future consideration. And, ladies and gentlemen, this is London, and no site in London, England, is more inspiring to an American than the site of the recently refortified American Embassy in Grosvenor Square in West London. So lovely is it now. Well, first of all, they built an ugly building to start with. You know, one of those kind of mid-60s chunky things on a beautiful historic square. And then, of course, with the recent stuff, there have just been layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of barricades and barriers and barriers and barricades in the streets around the embassy, which is, of course, situated on one corner of a lovely residential square, leading some neighbors, some of whom have actually moved away because of it, to say, well, it looks a bit Soviet, doesn't it? But on the other hand, since Vladimir Putin was recently reported by the Asia Times to have kind of eaten America's lunch just before coming to Kennebunkport for his lobster dinner with President Bush, eaten America's lunch, they say, they report, by concluding deals with Central and Western European countries for to sell them gas, which would obviate the need or market potential for an American pipeline from Central Asia, meaning it would all go through Russian-owned pipelines from Central Asia. So too bad, Turkey. So maybe they're the smart deal makers and we're the grim embassy builders. Hello, welcome to the show.
Stand up and face the trouble.
from part of the world. No, actually from Leicester Square in London, England. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. It will be kind of more musical than perhaps customary, given the occasion. You may know what I'm talking about. You may not. You may not care. But in any case, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of not caring, news of the new Iraq, for your listening pleasure. Dateline Baghdad, the refugee officials from the United Nations. Refugee officials from that very United Nations are accusing donor countries, the very countries that said they were going to help out the refugees from Iraq, of neglecting the plight of, well, just hundreds of thousands of refugees from Iraq flooding into neighboring Syria and Jordan. Quote, it is unconscionable that generous host countries, Syria, a generous host country, ladies and gentlemen, which also, by the way, this week in the Asia Times online, was credited with helping broker the release of the BBC reporter from Hamas. No, actually from Gaza. Is there only one vowel in Arabic, by the way? Hamas, Gaza, Abbas. Get an E. But apparently Syria playing this role, you see. And now a generous host country to Iraqi refugees. Have we misjudged the Syrians? This quote is from Ron Redmond, a spokesman for the UN High Commissioner of Refugees. It's unconscionable that generous host countries be left on their own to deal with such a huge crisis. In April, way back in April, the United States and other Western countries pledged financial help for Iraqis fleeing violence and chaos. Where would that be? Oh, yeah, that's right, in the new democracy. But even as the number of refugees in Syria and Jordan swells to more than 2 million, aid has been minimal. That would almost suggest we don't care. So far, donations total 70 million, an additional 10 million in pledges. Hundreds of millions of dollars are needed to cope with the crisis, according to UN officials. Quote, the two countries caring for the biggest proportion of Iraqi refugees, Syria and Jordan, have still received next to nothing in help from the world community, says Redmond. It's like they're New Orleans or the flooded North Country of Britain. Quote, the growing refugee population and the communities that host them are facing enormous hardships that will only get worse if the international community doesn't put its money where its mouth is. Well, that's just downright unsanitary. You don't want to do that. Sweden has provided safe haven to more Iraqi refugees than the United States. Isn't that wild? But announced Friday they would make it more difficult for Iraqis to seek asylum and would deport by force any who are denied refuge. Sweden has provided shelter to more than 18,000 Iraqis in the last year. The United States, fewer than 800. Sweden used to be positively unique. Now they've joined the rest of the gang, says the Secretary General of the European Council on Refugees. 4 million Iraqis have been displaced inside and outside Iraq. Syria gets 30,000 of them a month. You hear that, Pat Buchanan? You think we're being swamped? Syria gets 30,000 Iraqis coming across the border a month. Of course, they look like Syrians. The United States accepted 63 Iraqi refugees last month. So that would be about 29,000. You do the math. Just 36 in the first 5 months of this year. Syria allows Iraqi children to attend free public schools. You hear that, Pat Buchanan? But it doesn't have enough space for them. Only 32,000 of the hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children in Syria are actually in school. But those are Syrian schools, so they're not missing much. That's the new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. Taking baby steps. If by that you mean a baby amoeba. And I believe now it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First two apologies delivered audiophonically for your listening pleasure. First, from the White House briefing this week, where newly emboldened, almost as if the fact that President Bush's popularity figures are now below 29% has stiffened the spine of the Washington Press Corps, almost as if. The newly emboldened Washington Press Corps was peppering Tony Snow with questions about the commutation of Scooter Libby's sentence. And Tony Snow had finally been pushed into a bit of a rhetorical corner, thusly.
That's improper to be leaking those names.
Yes, it's improper. So you say someone in this administration owes the American public an apology.
I'll apologize.
Tony.
Done.
That was his apology. Triumphantly done. At least he didn't say done diddly undone done. And now from an event that I was at a mere 24 hours ago, nervous as a wet hen ready to go on, this was BBC presenter Jonathan Ross following a joke by Chris Rock from the stage of Live Earth, which was carried on the BBC's air. Oh, no, that's not it. Here it is now.
What's he done? Has he been using bad language? If he has, I would like to take this opportunity to apologise for those of you who were offended by Chris Rock's foul mouth. And I promise you, I shall not let it go unpunished. I shall have him up here on this couch, and I shall make him apologise personally to all of you for his foul, 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 dirty mouth.
Thanks.
And let you know that in advance as well.
So
when you're
right.
On stage, I want none of it.
No.
None of us want any of it, do we?
No.
I apologise. He's getting big laughs, though.
No, he was introducing the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And now, there's Elmer Moore apologies. Dateline, Frankfurt and Boston. A twin dateline. Boy, you want to save those, don't you? Software maker SAP has disclosed that a U.S. subsidiary made inappropriate downloads of data from rival Oracle's website and said U.S. authorities asked it to hand over internal documents. The German software giant apologized for the misconduct, saying it would continue to investigate the matter and beef up oversight at the unit. It made the unexpected disclosure that it filed formal response to charges of intellectual property theft that Oracle made in a March lawsuit. Within an hour of learning he'd keep his job, Detroit Zoo director Ron Kagan publicly apologized to the community for falsely claiming on his resume that he had a doctoral degree in zoology. In a letter posted on the zoo website, Kagan said he accepted the decision that required the apology, docked him a month's salary, about $16,000, and will put a written reprimand in his personnel file. Quote, I'm grateful to our board for accepting my apology. I offer no excuses and for inviting me to stay on as executive director. I accept the board's sanctions with the seriousness with which they were given and hope that my performance going forward will reinforce that they made the right decision. The Detroit Zoological Society Chairman Gail Warden said the board was disappointed that Kagan had misrepresented his qualifications, but was impressed with the way he's run the zoo for almost 15 years before they found out he was lying. Quote, we do trust him. We feel he's the person who's best to provide leadership to the zoo going forward. Now, if he'd been lying about being a surgeon but had been doing surgeries well for 15 years, would they? Deadline, Bangkok, Thailand. A hotel in Bangkok on Thursday apologized to a transvestite who had started a boycott of the international chain it belongs to after she was barred entry to one of its nightclubs. Quote, we made a mistake and currently are taking measures to make sure it will not be repeated, said the manager of the 429-room Novotel Siam Square at a press conference. Doorman at the nightclub of the hotel, Concept CM2, would not let... What is the name of this? Well, would not let this transvestite enter on June 22nd because she is a transvestite. She said she works in Bangkok for a French cosmetics company. Gay rights groups in Bangkok launched a boycott through websites, and more than 100 gay rights organizations worldwide joined the campaign. The transvestite also threatened to file a lawsuit if Novotel did not apologize by Thursday. The hotel spokesman said the apology was not in response to the boycott, but to make up for a mistake. Britney Spears has apologized for her paparazzi incident that occurred earlier this year, which involved her attacking an SUV with an umbrella. Well, that sounds like a fairly unequal battle. Outside estranged husband Kevin Federline's house. The incident occurred after the singer shaved her head. Writing to a gossip website in a handwritten note, and how hip is that? She said, quote, I want to apologize for the past incident with the umbrella. I was preparing a character for a possible movie role where the husband doesn't play his part, so they swap places. Unfortunately, I didn't get the part. I'm sorry, I got all carried away with my role. Signed, Britney. Yeah, I know the feeling when you start preparing for roles. It can make you goofy. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
We've been driving around from one end of this town to the other and back. But no one's ever seen us driving our Econoline van. And no one's ever heard of our band. We're the Mesopotamians. Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, Pal, and Gilgamesh. The Mesopotamish sun is beating down and making cracks in the ground, but there's nowhere else to stand in Mesopotamia, the kingdom where we secretly reign. Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. This is my last stick of gum. I'm gonna cut it up so everybody else gets some. Except for Ashurbanipal, who says my haircut makes me look like a Mohenjo-Daro. Hey, Ashurbanipal, I'm a Mesopotamian.
This is Le Show from London, but news from back home, ladies and gentlemen, that's, well, it's not meant to reassure. The federal emergency, it's news from inspectors general, the people that actually find out the stuff. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, we know them and love them. It does not have effective procedures to protect information contained on its laptop computers. That's right. It's part of the Department of Homeland Security. It has insecure laptop computers. Attention, Mr. Chertoff. This is from the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General. It's only been what? How many years we've had this department? The IG tested 298 of the 32,000 laptop computers. Discovered significant shortcomings in the agency's ability to set security configurations. Well, that's tough. That's guy stuff. Conduct patching to remedy vulnerabilities. well, that's Microsoft stuff, and manage its inventory. Quote, as a result, sensitive information stored and processed in FEMA's laptop computers may not be protected properly, says the inspector general. The same ineffective configurations extend to FEMA's desktop computers. Well, at least they're consistent. At least they can sync. Literally. Suggesting that the problem is widespread throughout the agency, said the report. Skinner said his staff was unable to review FEMA's compliance with the requirements of the Federal Information Security Management Act because FEMA did not have a complete inventory of its laptop computers. Well, you know, along with the ice and the water and the trailers and the thing, we got to count the laptops now too. Here's the most reassuring part of the whole deal. FEMA officials agreed with the report. That's kind of gutsy, you got to admit. They actually agreed. Yeah, we stink. Thank you. Thank you for pointing out we stink. We really, really do. But we're stinking for you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the week that the other shoe dropped, or let's say half the shoe. President Bush commuted the sentence of I, Lewis, Scooter, Libby, the I for Irvin, the former aide of Vice President Cheney. The president announced, we all know this, right? You all know all of this stuff. The president announced that he thought Libby's sentence was excessive. His 30-month jail sentence given to him by a judge who was appointed by President Bush. So he commuted the sentence to no months, no days, no weeks. Pay the fine, do the probation. Oh, or have one of your fundraisers pay the fine. The fine was paid within 3 days. So that was painful. And as has been explained, I think, now to all of us, the difference in commuting the sentence as opposed to a full pardon, which some were expecting, and which the president hasn't closed the door to, is that with the sentence commuted, Libby is still guilty, still is pursuing an appeal, still is protected by the Fifth Amendment in case some pesky congressional committee wanted to subpoena him. There have been those who've suggested that this outcome could have been foretold at the point in the Libby trial where his defense, having threatened to call Vice President Cheney as a witness in his defense, they suddenly decided not to and to basically just fall back on the defense of, I don't remember. No comment. Well, no comment, no spoken comment from the vice president yet. Just a musical one.
He was the soul of loyalty. Wouldn't even look at a drink. Now it's the reward of royalty. Scooters skating past the clink. He was my personal Cheney. Most secret than you'd think. How brawny was his brainy. Scooters sliding by the clink. Scooters sliding by the clink. Irvin slipping past the slammer. Passing by the pokey. Libby almost ended up like Liddy. Moral clarity. Kinda smoky. No cooler for the scooter. Thanks to him whom he'd anoint. He's still free to bend over. Scooters rescued from the joint. Scooters skating by the joint. He was the poobah of discretion, His pee wouldn't make a plink. Gonna make his best impression as he walks straight past the clink. He was an agent's outer, just tasked to make a stink. He was a rumor's router, but he won't be leaking in the clink. He won't be leaking in the clink. Irvin could have ended up a rapper. Trousers getting looser. Surveilled within the crapper. Maybe even going Brucer. No cooler for the scooter. The fall guy didn't disappoint. Thank God we were there to catch him. Scooters sliding past the joint. Scooters skating by the joint. Scooters rescued from the joint.
There's a place that I know where the sycamores grow and daffodils have their fun, where the cares of the day seem to slowly fade away in the glow of the evening sun. Peace when the day is done. If I go there real late, let my mind meditate on everything to be done. If I search deep inside, let my conscience be my guide, then the answers are sure to come. Don't have to worry none. Sweet seed when it grows like a big yellow rose can wither and come undone. But that sweet smelling thing will be blossoming next spring with the kiss of the midday sun. Living has just begun. When you find peace of mind, leave your worries behind. Don't say that it can't be done.
with a new point of view. Life's true meaning comes to you, and the freedom you seek is one. Peace is for everyone. Peace is for you. Peace is for everyone.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Australia's Defence Minister Brendan Nelson says securing the world's oil supply is one of the government's considerations as it decides how long to keep troops in Iraq. But the Prime Minister of the same government denies it. He did cite energy demand as one of a number of strategic trends that made it important for the U.S.-led coalition to succeed in Iraq by the afternoon. However, of the same day of that speech, Howard denied that oil was a reason to be in Iraq. We're not there because of oil, and we didn't go there because of oil, and we don't remain there because of oil. The reason we remain there is we want to give the people of Iraq a possibility of embracing democracy. Embracing it? I think they're... The treasurer of the government also flatly rejected the defense... Defense Minister Nelson's linking of oil in Iraq. We're fighting for something much more important here than oil, said Costello. This is about democracy and freedom in the Middle East. Unquote. Howard did not specifically use the word oil in his morning speech, but the Prime Minister's reference to world demand for energy was a significant departure from the normal rhetoric of the leaders of the U.S.-led coalition who have avoided linking the war to the Middle East's strategic position as a world energy supplier. But now, this contrasts with Howard's statement in 2003 when he said, "No criticism is more outrageous than the claim that U.S. behavior is driven by a wish to take control of Iraq's oil reserves." But Dr. Nelson, in his radio interview, said there were many priorities for Australia, and resource security was one of them. Quote, "And obviously the Middle East itself, not only Iraq, but the entire region, is an important supplier of energy, oil in particular, to the rest of the world, and Australians and all of us need to think well what would happen if there were a premature withdrawal from Iraq." Unquote. Dr. Nelson, Australia's defense minister. Also, so much news of Pakistan this week, ladies and gentlemen. From outside, most of it outside the bubble. Get to it in a moment. But first, the quote of the week. The quote of the week is in the New York Times, which has awakened finally to the irony of Pakistan, our ally. As, you know, because they don't sympathize with terrorists, and they don't invade their neighbor, and they don't proliferate weapons of mass destruction. We know that. So here is the quote from Bruce Hoffman, a terrorism expert at Georgetown University, from the New York Times. Quote, "Their reluctance to take risk or jeopardize our political relationship with President Musharraf, Pakistan, may well account for the fact that 5.5 years after 9/11, we're still trying to run bin Laden and Zawahiri to ground." Unquote. Place that in the context of, from the Financial Times of London, "Pakistan has lifted some of the restrictions imposed on A.Q. Khan, the disgraced nuclear scientist, in a significant departure from previous policy. He's the father of the Pakistani bomb, as you know, and the head of a bazaar that sold nuclear materials and information to, Libya, Iran, North Korea. This change reverses some of the curbs placed on him in February 2004 when he publicly admitted trading the nuclear know-how and technology to those countries. Khan was given a presidential pardon by General President Musharraf for his services to the country, but he's lived under virtual house arrest since then. During that time, Pakistan has turned down requests from international officials investigating the scale to which Iran's nuclear program has developed. Thanks to Mr. Khan. Pakistan's foreign ministry said there was no change in Khan's status, and he continued to live a quiet life with his family in a wealthy district of Islamabad. But friends of Mr. Khan said he'd been given permission to meet with groups of up to 5 people at a time, preferably over lunch or dinner. I guess he doesn't eat breakfast. They said he's also allowed to visit Karachi, the southern port city where her sister and brother live. This is a huge shift in the way AQ Khan has lived these past 3.5 years, said the author of a book on Pakistan's nuclear program, who met Khan several times before he was placed under house arrest. Opinion among observers over what has prompted the easing of the restrictions is divided. Senior Western diplomats say the Pakistani government may have been moved by Khan's declining health and treatment for prostate cancer last year. Said one Western diplomat, if he's not in very good health, it's best to let his friends and family see and know for themselves that he's receiving the best possible medical care. General Musharraf may also have been swayed by the fact that he's up for election this year. And Khan is popular because he's the father of Pakistan's nuclear weapon. I guess that makes you popular in Pakistan. But, ladies and gentlemen, the buried lead comes from the AP report on the same story. Way, 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 way down near the bottom of the story about AQ Khan not being under such strict house arrest anymore comes this sentence. I think second from the bottom, as a matter of fact. Quote, one of the officials who spoke Monday said no country had asked to directly interrogate Khan and reiterated that the investigation of his nuclear proliferation scheme was over. No country had asked to directly interrogate Khan. Last time I looked, the United States was a country. More news from outside the bubble. More proof that Britain and America really are pretty much the same country. Equipment that allows the emergency services to cope in the event of a terrorist attack is seriously flawed in Britain, according to The Guardian. A week after the terrorist bomb attempts on London and Glasgow, a study is expected to question the efficiency of the £3 billion communication system commissioned by the government, which would allow all the different emergency services to communicate with one another. Sound familiar? The system has been controversial because its implementation has been delayed. Communication was identified as a key failing during the reaction to the 7/7 attacks in London, much like the same diagnosis was made after 9/11. Research by the London's 7/7 Review Committee suggests the system is erratic in certain buildings because there's metal in the infrastructure. Researchers have been told radios won't even work in some police stations and in some retail outlets. The fault is said to raise questions about their effectiveness underground, where deficiencies in communication on the 7/7 event were most extreme. The report also says the size of the contract does not reflect the expansion of the police and the number of officers who would need access to the communication system. Problems with communicating above ground will also be highlighted. London is divided into 4 zones by the new communication system, but there is sporadic difficulty maintaining the signal for those who pass from one zone to the other, says the chairman of the committee that's investigating the communication setup. These are inherent problems that should have been identified from the beginning. The contract was rushed in 2002 because of the impending Commonwealth Games. Well, thank God the Olympics are only... And finally, news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Part of the cosmetics giant L'Oreal was found guilty of racial discrimination after it apparently was trying to exclude non-white women from promoting its shampoo. In a landmark case, the Garnier division of the beauty empire and its recruitment agency were fined about $30,000 each after they recruited women on the basis of race. And a senior figure at the employment agency was given a 3-month suspended prison sentence. The case was brought against L'Oreal, the world's largest cosmetic firm, over the campaign in 2000. Women were sought to demonstrate the shampoo line Fructistil in supermarkets outside Paris. They sought young women to hand out samples and discuss hairstyling with shoppers. A fax detailing the profile of hostesses sought by L'Oreal stipulated women should be 18 to 22, sought the size, and BBR, the initials for Bleu, Blanc, Rouge, the colors of the French flag. Prosecutors argued that BBR is a shorthand used by the far right in France, a well-known code among employers to mean white. French people and not those of North African, African or Asian backgrounds. A former employee at the communications firm acting for L'Oreal told the court her clients demanded white hostesses. She said, told the court when she'd gone ahead and presented candidates of color, a superior in her own company had said, quote, she'd had enough of Christine and her Arabs. Another said, quote, I once had a good woman candidate, but she was non-white. I had to ask someone to pretend that our list was full. It was hard. L'Oreal, ladies and gentlemen, interesting company to me because until recently, they owned the rights to the movie This is Spinal Tap. And we have just finished the week in which the United States celebrates Independence Day. It's, I didn't walk by the American Embassy. I would have, you know, hoisted a glass, but too many barriers, too many barricades. So instead, I just present this version of a song you've heard on this broadcast before, but you've never heard it like this, although you will when the CD of the host of this program comes out in just about a month from now. End of plug.
I was raised a decent way to swell my heart with pride. Each and every time I saw glory passing by. Raised to think that America was the land you love to love. That the stars stood for heaven, the stripes stood for faith, and that old flag's what God meant man to fly. But somewhere, from a spaceship maybe, comes another breed. Yeah, these folks are so nutty that it's crazy blue they bleed. And they burn the beloved symbol of our nation's liberty. But the stars still stand for heaven, the stripes still stand for faith, and a killing's what those people really need. So let the flag burners fry on the 4th of July. Them independent of their skins. We'll bake us up some taters and we'll roast some desecrators. Let them fry on the 4th of July. 4th of July. Now a flag is just a little more than fabric and some thread. Its blue came from the heavens, from the blood of patriots came the red. And the white? The white came from the only race that's voted since the start. But the stars still stand for heaven. The stripes still stand for faith. You put those dreams of burning it to bed. Now, some people talk of freedom. But let me tell you, friends, your freedom doesn't start until the time when my nose ends. And a lot of people die so I could sing this little song. But the stars still stand for heaven, the stripes still stand for faith, the flag that's burnt ashes never mends. So let the flag burners fry on the 4th of July. We'll make them part of the fireworks display. We'll shoot off Roman candles and electrocute the vandals. Let them fry on the 4th of July. One more time, everybody. Oh, let the flag burners fry on the 4th of July. You know Miss Betsy Ross would have wanted it this way. If they don't like it here, they can leave it all behind. Let them fry on the 4th of July. 4th of July.
Here is a word to the wise, the top dietitians in town, and said, best source of vitamin C that can be is a lemon twist. Even the skeptic replies, here's a suggestion you can't resist. A cool glass of ice is improved with some slices of lemon twist. It isn't merely circumstantial evidence that the lemon is a highly healthful citrus fruit. The most respected scientists agree with the physiologist that here's one fact you can't dispute. Why don't you open your eyes? Your psychosomatic ills won't persist. If quick like a rabbit, you latch to the habit of lemon twist.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm. Won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Dateline Beijing, temperatures in Tibet have been up 5 degrees Celsius, 9 degrees Fahrenheit above average so far this month, as global warming pushes up temperatures, according to it. Chinese weather official. Global warming is having an effect on Tibet, making the temperature higher and higher, said senior engineer with the region's meteorological station. The Tibetan capital also recorded its highest July temperature in 30 years on Monday, when the mercury hit 84 degrees. Tibet just experienced its third warm winter in 7 years. And the official Chinese news agency reports Tibet's glaciers have melted at an annual rate of about 51 square miles over the past 3 decades. So the Chinese don't have to dominate Tibet anymore. It's melting. Ancient ponds in the Arctic are drying up during the polar summer as warmer temperatures evaporate shallow bodies of water. This is according to Canadian researchers, eh? They say the evaporation of these ponds, some of which have existed for, thousands of years, illustrates the rapid effects of global warming, threatening bird habitats and breeding grounds and reducing drinking water for animals. So, let's get some more bands together. For 24 years, researchers at the University of Alberta in Edmonton and Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, have been tracking ponds at Cape Herschel, located on the eastern... Anyway, when they went back to check on those ponds, some of the 6,000-year-old ponds had vanished. Quote, we were surprised. We arrived in early to mid-July, and the ponds we had been monitoring were dry. Some of them had dried up completely. Some were just about to lose the last remaining centimeters of water, said Marianne Douglas, director of the Canadian Circumpolar Institute. She continued, it's really interesting to see how quickly it's happening. We could see this trend had started a while ago, but in no time do we expect it to accelerate. Climate changes began, according to fossilized sediments in the pools, as long as 150 years ago. The researchers had thought the ponds were permanent. Babe, nothing's permanent. When it comes to global warming, climatologists say it's not just the heat, it's the humidity. Despite widely varied regional differences, the world has dampened. Warmer air has the capacity to store more water vapor. This means you'll have nastier, wetter summers, won't you? Sadly, there is no cure, no advice, and no escape. This according to the Chicago Tribune. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. a totally copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Gentlemen, because his name was the only name of a member of the band that was not announced on Live Earth yesterday, I want to point out that the keyboard player for Spinal Tap is Caucasian Jeffrey Vanston. And that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show from London. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, The Planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radio, available around the world via the internet on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, live and or archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And be just like saving the planet if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, Address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by a gang of people. A typical Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh and Chicago desks. Playlists are available at harryshearer.com, newly refurbished and almost up and running. And a typical Le Show chapeau also to Adrian Bodenham here at Capital Radio in London for helping to make today's program broadcastable. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.